Hello and welcome back to View from the Sofa. Jamie's back now and he'll be with us for the rest of the Test match. And today we have a very special guest on, Adam Mountford, BBC cricket producer and sort of head of TMS, producer of TMS. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming on.
Hi, Hector and Jamie. Lovely to be on the podcast.
Well, Adam, we've just been talking before we've come on air about your role as BBC producer. You've obviously had a fairly different winter, as we all have. And looking at the current series, Poise at 1-1, we woke up all full of excitement and hope, and it went pretty badly wrong pretty quickly. How do you see it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a frustrating day, wasn't it? I think there was quite a lot of optimism, bizarrely, even though things went pretty badly wrong at the last Test match in Chennai. I think we all got excited about a pink ball Test match, the prospect of Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad bowling together in tandem, you know, the idea that perhaps England could fight their way back into the game. They won the toss, which is obviously what everyone was hoping for, England. And actually made a reasonable start, despite the sort of early loss of Dom Sibley. And when Zach Crawley was batting, we thought, well, perhaps this could be quite a decent score. He was playing beautifully on his return to the team. And then it all went rather badly wrong, and it wasn't the sort of the pink ball seeming deliveries that we thought it might be. It was the spin of Billy Axel Patel that obviously went through England. And I think there's that thought that even though we got excited by the idea of a pink ball test under lights, it wasn't a pink ball test under lights in England or even in Australia. It was in India, and unsurprisingly, the pitches, you know, still continued to take a lot of spin and were difficult. Mm. Although, to be fair, actually, I think England just didn't bat particularly well. I don't think it turned massively. I think they kept playing down the wrong line and not playing particularly well. Were they playing for the sort of spin they had in Chennai? I'm not too sure. But yeah, I think overall the feeling is disappointment. There was a lot of anticipation about this game. Could this be the match where England fought their way back in? And it's going to be a very, very long way back after that first day.
I think there was a stat that nine wickets fell to spin, but six of those wickets didn't spin at all. They just played, as you say, played down the wrong line.
Yeah, really strange. And, you know, I've been working on the cricket social up in Salford and this test match, and which you can obviously hear on the website and the app. And you know, the debate all day has been, why is it that for some reason people weren't playing, you know, were playing for spin that wasn't there? And I do think some of it was, I suppose, hangover from the last match and expecting it to do things that it wasn't. And I think that's what went wrong from an England batting point of view. I mean, I don't know. Absolute expert, but that's certainly what the experts on the programme were saying today.
So TMS aren't doing a live coverage of this tour, but you did cover the West Indies tour last lockdown, last summer. I think our listeners would be interested to know, when you were listening to it, it sounded as if they were all in the same room. But of course, they were in different parts of the country. How did you connect it so well, and how do we hear it so clearly?
Yeah, so what happened? So for the Sri Lanka series that just went before India, that's the last series we did on Test match, especially in that way. And yeah, we sort of originally the idea was we found out that we weren't able to travel over to Sri Lanka because basically they weren't able to for travel restrictions, and also the Sri Lanka board said that no one from overseas was able to go. In fact, actually for those Test matches, there wasn't a single journalist, either local or international, there, apart from the sort of host TV broadcaster. So obviously we had no choice but try and do something different in order to get the commentary on the air. Originally we had the idea of getting the whole TMS team up in Manchester where the BBC Sports studios are, and they'd all sit there and do the broadcast off the television there. But then it became clear, as unfortunately the COVID situation got worse after Christmas, that that wasn't sensible to take a whole sort of team and put them in one place. So we thought, what can we do? And the idea was we'd split people across the country, broadcasting, you know, from a variety of places. So we did have a few people down at the Oval sitting in the TMS box, even though, of course, there's no play out in the middle. There were some people there. And we had, you know, Abraham Rainford Brent was in a living room at home. We had Andy Zaltzman, our statistician, in what we quickly labelled the stat shed in Streatham. He was broadcasting there. And then the sort of pièce de résistance was Jonathan Agnew broadcasting in his pyjamas from his home in Melton Mowbray, because it was so early in the morning we're broadcasting. And I think he sort of entered into the spirit of it. But actually, I think what happened was, and I'm sure you found this with the success of your podcast, that people are really, I think, entering into the spirit of things at the moment, making the best of what the situation we're in. And I think actually we had so much goodwill that we were just trying to get this programme together. And it wouldn't be absolutely perfect because we're not there. We're broadcasting off the telly. It's not how we want to do things, but we had no choice. And actually, we just got on with it. And I think the spirit of the programme was brilliant. And actually, people joining in and telling us stories, particularly when it was snowing, of them, you know, out playing cricket in the snow and, you know, snowmen cricketers and throwing snowballs and that sort of stuff. You know, it really sort of created that idea that we're all joined together in England. Things weren't great, but we were going to make the best of it. And, you know, and there were some funny moments, you know, one I'm sure you'll refer to was when Agus was commentating off the telly and described a wicket identically. So that's amazing. It's exactly the same dismissal happened before. And, of course, he was watching a replay. And I think it showed that, you know, commentating off the telly is not what we want to do, but there are perils about it. But we had no choice. We had to make the best of things. So, you know, that's what happened. And there were things that weren't perfect, but we got on with it.
Well, it sounded amazing from when we're listening here. It sounded almost exactly the same. And I think it's fair to say everyone loves listening to TMS, and we've missed it hugely during this tour because we can't listen to live coverage there. You have a great bunch of commentators and pundits, as you've said, Michael Vaughan, Jonathan Agnew, Phil Tufnell. What's it like working with them? Because, of course, Agger's with that, just describing the replay, it must be quite fun to work with them.
Well, yeah, look, I'm unbelievably fortunate in that I get to, you know, work alongside both broadcast heroes and cricket heroes. You know, I was fortunate to work in 2005 on the Ashes, and there I was there, you know, getting emotional when Michael Vaughan brought the Ashes home after, you know, 18 years of hurt. And now I'm sharing a commentary box with him. You know, Phil Tufnell, I loved as a spin bowler and, you know, the sort of carrot he was, a bit of a larrikin and all that sort of thing. And I get a chance to work with him now, and I've been so fortunate to work with all sorts of legendary figures in cricket. You know, Rahul Dravid we worked with a few years ago, and he was an absolute legend, a hero of mine. Adam Gilchrist, all these sort of people, you know, I've loved watching, and I get the chance to work with them. I get to put a rota together that has their name on it, you know, and tell them what I think they did well and did badly in a day. It's a remarkable thing to do. And, you know, I'm very lucky. I always say that, you know, in lots of ways, I've got the best job in the world, because most of the time, I get to watch the game I love, cricket in the ground, from one of the best views in the house, because we get this remarkable view from the commentary box. I get to listen to my favourite radio programme, Test Match Special, and we get an almost constant supply of cake. So in terms of a job, that ain't bad. I mean, sadly, over the last year or so, it's not been quite the same. As you say, we've had to broadcast from not the ground. And most disturbingly, Hector and Jamie, we've not been allowed to have any cake. Say, last summer, we were in the bubble, and we weren't able to have any, so I didn't think about resigning at one point. I thought this is not the job I signed up for, but it, the spirit has been great. I'm unbelievably fortunate to do what I do, and also I think, you know, what you get, what we found in Sri Lanka was, you know, what we do really, people really care about. They absolutely care about what we do, and that's brilliant. You know, sometimes it puts a lot of pressure on you, because if you do things to the programme they don't like, they let me know about it, obviously. But actually, I'd rather just think that people really care about that than not. And some of the stories we got in Sri Lanka of people, you know, listening to us on their way to shifts in hospital, or coming back after a really disturbing shift with people, and we're able to bring some sort of normality, some sort of escapism for people. And some of the stories we get were fantastic. And I'm so lucky to do a job and work in something that people, it really matters to people, and that's fantastically satisfying.
I find TMS like a warm blanket sometimes. You know exactly what you're going to get, and it's just reassuringly sort of comfortable and comforting. I think it's fantastic. People always say that, you know, professional cricketers find it difficult, for example, to adapt to conditions in India or the English. Are there very different conditions to producing TMS around the world? Is there a sort of set formula, or do things get thrown up in the air when you're out in India, Sri Lanka, wherever it is?
Oh, totally different. It couldn't be more different. And in some ways, that's one of the great joys of the job. And the bizarre thing is, when I broadcast in England, we're quite fortunate to have sort of engineering support, for example, people who help, you know, get the programme on the air. And that's, you know, for me, that's great, because I can concentrate on producing the programme and making sure that it sounds right and the intervals are interesting and all that sort of thing. But when I'm working abroad, we don't have engineering support, for example. And generally, I carry a big red case full of wires and leads and various other things. And I've got to get the programme on the air. And some countries, that's easier than others. And frankly, you know, sometimes I'm just thrilled and delighted that I'm able to broadcast anything, let alone what the quality is like, just to get it on the air. And, you know, one of my first games in this job was broadcasting in Sri Lanka. And we arrived in Dambulla, which is a ground absolutely in the heart of the jungle, really. And I got there, you know, and thought, I wonder what's going to be there to broadcast. Got in the box we'd been assigned. There was literally nothing there, not even a power socket, nothing. And we had to put a MS program out on the air. Unfortunately, I'd been given before this tour this very small sort of satellite dish to broadcast from. And I thought, I'd hope I wouldn't need to use it, but I had no choice. There was nothing else there to use. But I realized the only way I could get a signal from this satellite dish was by physically holding it myself in the corner. The only chance I could get the right sort of signal to broadcast. So, you know, I had this great vision of a TMS producer, you know, sort of lounging, listening to the program, feet up in sunshine. And actually, my first program in the jungle, I'm there having to hold the satellite dish to be able to broadcast. And what was bizarre was that because it's the jungle, it was a day-night game. Inevitably, the jungle, there's thousands of bugs, obviously, are attracted to a floodlight in a jungle. And because I was having to hold the satellite dish, and it was so hot, I decided to wear shorts that day. So I'm holding the satellite dish and aware that my legs are being bitten to smithereens.
Oh, no.
And I couldn't do anything about it. I had to keep the program going. It was the only time, I'll be honest, Hetch and Jamie, that I wasn't too disappointed that England were bowled out for less than 100. It was actually Andrew Strauss' debut for England. They got bowled out for, I think, 80-odd and lost the game pretty quickly. And I was able to get some cream on my damaged legs. But I think it gives you an example that, you know, TMS is a very different experience to, you know, standing out at Lord's when we've got engineering support and everything else to being in the jungle in Dambulla when it's all down to me.
What a great story. Is there something, or anything, I suppose, post-COVID that you think you'll take with you that you'll change, having had the experience of COVID? Is there anything that, you know, might in the future make your life easier when it comes to things like that?
Oh, yeah, look, technologies. I mean, we're all using it, aren't we? We're all having to rely on technology more than ever before, whether it's Zoom calls or FaceTimes or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think we have a lot more confidence, actually, to do, you know, do more things with people around the world. And at the moment, we sort of have the view that everyone's got to be in the commentary box to make it work. I think we would have the confidence that sometimes we you know, use contributors from other parts of the world who can't be in the box. I'd probably take a few more risks with that because I think people are more understanding of how it sounds, that things won't always sound perfect because we're all used to these sort of stream sounding things we're all working on. So I think I'd definitely take that experience. And I think also, you know, I think people are more, you know, they are more generous, I think, in us coping in these circumstances. I think, you know, they are more understanding. And I think, you know, I would take more risks in what we're doing, I think, because of that, and use technology in a different way. So I definitely learn that. And also things like, you know, we're doing this thing on Zoom at the moment, the fact we can see each other has been great actually as well, broadcasting, that, you know, even when you can't be in the same place, the fact you can have interaction even in this way, you know, adds something. So I certainly think we'd look to that in the future, absolutely.
And going back to today's play, you know, sometimes you've got to put your hands up and say we just didn't play very well or the other team's better. But do you think anything, team selection, the pitch, the new stadium, did any of those come into play too? Or did we just say it's a bad day in the office?
It was a bad day in the office. I mean, I think selection was fascinating and really difficult today. There's been a massive debate, as you know, about rest and rotation and about, you know, whether we should be always picking the best team. And I think we have been able to. And I fully understand why that is, because of the situation that everyone's coping with COVID, plus the complication of a very busy winter bringing in cricketers. But the complication today was added with, what's the pink ball test going to be like? A new stadium, a new pitch, you know, how's that going to play? And I think it was really difficult today to know what to do. And you know, what we saw was England going into this game with, you know, an extra seamer. The Dom Best situation was difficult because I think they were worried about his confidence having been dropped for the last game. Although, you know, I think he was a very confident lad, actually. I think he'd probably been all right. But, you know, it's very difficult to leave out Jimmy Anderson or Stuart Broad on a pink ball game. And then you've got Jofra Archer, who's the difference. And he took a wicket with that short ball today. How do you leave him out? So, you know, I think it was very difficult to know what to do. They made the change with the batting as well. I could understand Zach Crawley getting a chance and Johnny Bairstow obviously being a good player of spin, you know, bringing him back. And of course, that didn't quite work today. And I do think this is the most complicated and difficult winter in terms of selection you could ever wish to have, really, because you're coping with different conditions, you're coping with the bubbles you're having to live with. And I sat in a bubble last summer, I think it's difficult. You know, you are living together, you aren't getting out and about, there's, you know, you're eating on your own, you're social distancing the whole time, there's no freedom, you're away from your families. I think it's difficult. You know, I know these cricketers and us in broadcasting, you know, we're paid to do it. And I think people have, a lot of people have far more difficult lives at the moment in COVID than cricketers or journalists. But, you know, there are some challenges about that I think make things difficult. So, you know, I think selection wasn't quite right. I think they would love to have an extra spinner and they didn't. But you're right, ultimately, England didn't bat particularly well. India bowled well. I don't think it's insurmountable. What I would say is I don't think it's certain England are going to get thrashed in this game, because they can get back into it. One of the challenges, and we often say the first session is crucial, but tomorrow the first session really is crucial, because India are batting not under light. It's their great chance to pile on runs. But if England can get amongst them, can get some early wickets, then, you know, if they can restrict India's lead, then they're not out of this game, because there will be periods in the match when bowling conditions are good for England, and they have got an attack that can exploit that. So, you know, I don't think you should be thinking this game's over. It's not. I do think, because of the strangeness of a pink ball test, it does open things out. And I do think, therefore, there is a chance for some more drama in this match. So, you know, best team will win, but I kind of hope it's a competitive match.
Yeah, what I was interested in was all the chat before the game. So you said the team selection. I found it a bit odd when I looked on my phone this morning and I saw that there was no Don Best, because we were talking to Mark Galloway in the episode that we released yesterday, and he said that Don Best had to be assuring because there's no Moeen Ali, only Jack Leach. He said that he thought that they should be playing two spinners, but we actually went the other way. We only picked... We picked one spinner and Jack Leach. Of course, Joe Root can bowl the odd few overs. He bowls quite well, actually. But then they chose Anderson, Broad and Archer, probably in the hope that under the lights they'd be able to dominate with some seam. India, however, chose three spinners, Axel Patel, Saini, I think it was, and Ashwin. And they took 9 out of the 10 wickets in the first inning, which kind of shows all this chat before the match was that it's going to be not a seamer's delight, but the seamer's going to come into play more than in Chennai. And then India went and chose three spinners when we only chose one spinner. How do you think that it's possible that two teams playing in the same match could pick completely different bowling options for one wicket?
Yeah, I think to be honest, I think it's because England saw the idea of a pink ball match and thought that means Broad, Anderson, Archer. I think they thought that. I think if they were convinced by their spinners, then I think they'd have played two. I think if Moeen had been available, I think they'd have played Moeen and Leach, to be honest. And I think the other problem they had in selection was because of the balance of the team they went for, they've got a really long tail. You know, Jofra Archer has got a lot of potential as a batsman, but he's not quite shown at international level. And him coming in at 8 makes it a really long tail. And that's what Don Best, actually, to him, can do, because not only is he, you know, obviously a fine spinner, but he's actually a really useful batsman. And he can not just hold up at end, he can score runs. And I think taking him out of the team, I might be tempted personally to even give him Chris Wokes a go, because think about Chris, he's had a very frustrating winter. He's not played, he's been on the tour since January. He's not played a game. But what Chris Wokes can do, A, he can perform with a pink ball, and he can bat. Gosh, he can bat. He's a fine player. And personally, I might have thought about Wokes playing instead of Broad. So you've got a batting of the order, have Archer coming in at 9, and I think Wokes would have bowled well with a pink ball. But, you know, Broad's the second-ranked bowler in the world, isn't he? So it's difficult to leave him out. You know, it's... What do? You know, you've got this amazing, you know, Broad and Anderson. It's very difficult to not to play them. But I think my worry about that tail would have been that. And I think India ultimately probably would have been the right team for this game. But who knows? You know, as I said, the thing about the pink ball game is you might have a period of the match when Broad and Anderson do dominate. And that might be the right thing to have done. So, you know, we're not absolutely certain it's the wrong selection, but it certainly looks like it at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm just on practical.
I was just thinking, because we're not running out of time, but I was just thinking, now we've got England have to win both these test matches to qualify for that World Test Championship. So you're looking forward to the summer. There's that, I think it's just a single test match versus New Zealand. there's a series against India again, and there's that World Test Championship final that England will hopefully make. I can't see them making it in. Do we know yet if TMS will be covering them? I was just quite interested just to do it. How long in advance will you know?
Oh, in terms of international cricket for the summer, yeah, TMS, of course, will have, you know, the games. World Test Championship final, I don't think's absolutely decided what's happening there yet, because obviously we don't know who's going to be in it, etc. But, you know, there'll certainly be coverage across the BBC at the very least. But certainly in terms of everything else, I can tell that for now, because we've got a commentary deal that's been done several years in advance. So, you know, every ball of every international game involving England this year will absolutely be there in the summer. We're looking forward to that, men and women's games. Yeah. And we're really excited. Yeah. You've got, you know, New Zealand, number one ranked team in the world in Test cricket first. You've got one day against Pakistan and against Sri Lanka, which you'll be able to hear on TMS. You've got that India series, which I think will be exciting at home. I think the conditions obviously so different, but they're such a fine seam bowling attack, India, that they'll give England a real battle at home with your Bumrahs and Ishan Sharmas, etc. And then also they got the 100 this year, which I know has been controversial in lots of ways, but a lot of excitement about that, you know, from a lot of people. So you've got that thrown into the mix. So, you know, combined, not to mention, hopefully, county cricket with, you know, the championship and the One Day Cup and the Vitality T20 Blast and everything else. I mean, there's so much cricket this year, potentially. You know, and look, gosh, we're so much wanted, don't we? We got far more cricket last year than I think we expected. But the thought of all that cricket with crowds as well, that's what we're all hoping for, aren't we? Who could turn up. You know, the thought of a Lord's New Zealand Test match with a crowd. I mean, gosh, it'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? Absolutely fantastic. You know, we did our best last year to create some joy from inside the bubble, but, you know, we all miss the crowds. We all miss that atmosphere and that wonderful feeling of matches. But yeah, TMS will be there. I'm working on the cricket social at the moment, but every evening I'm sitting with my planners working out who might be where and who might be commentating on each match and who we're bringing into the team, etc. So, you know, I'm really excited about that planning ahead. I'm really excited about the summer that we've got and really hoping that we've got the crowds and that everything happens as normal and that, you know, frankly, the COVID situation gets better, that we can all, you know, have something exciting to look forward.
It's the best feeling in the summer when you're either at the game and you have some headphones in listening to TMS, or you're just listening to TMS in the car or something. I remember we always go up to Scotland every year, and I think it was the South Africa in 2017. I think Roland Jones either got a hat-trick or a five, but we were listening up in the car. And it was the best coverage ever. And I just love listening to TMS now.
Oh, I think my favourite things of the year in lots of ways is that first soul limbo of the summer. TMS goes on the air. I still feel nervous. I've done this programme I've produced since 2007. TMS, I've been involved in BBC Cricket since 2002. And yet every start of every summer, I don't sleep the night before. I'm nervous as hell. I don't know why, because, you know, I should know what I'm doing by now, but I think it's because I'm excited by it. But I love that. You know, I'm so delighted working a job that really gets me going. I have goosebumps when I hear the soul limbo theme. I get nervous and excited when I put the first road trip on the commentary box wall, when I hear soul limbo for the first time, when I know the first ball's been bowled. It's a magical moment. And I think of all years, you know, this is what we're looking forward to, is that first ball of the summer in June, the first test match and the first county ball in April will be exciting enough. But the chance to hear that first test match, the first soul limbo will be brilliant. And that's what I'm, you know, really excited about.
Well, so you now, well, as you said, you've got your dream job in sports journalism, TMS. Certainly I'm looking to become a cricket journalist as well. And I was just wondering, how do you get into that business? Well, did you love cricket since you were born, or were you just sort of thrown in to the sport?
Oh, no, cricket was my thing. I sort of fell in love 1981. Obviously, the Botham's Ashes series, although, interestingly, I was supporting Australia in 1981. So my brother was supporting England. So I thought, well, I've got to be different. And actually, it was looking quite good at the start, as Australia went ahead, and Headingley was going really well from an Australian point of view. I loved sort of Kim Hughes and his golden locks and everything else, and I thought they were brilliant. And then it all turned round. But yeah, of course, like the rest of the nation, I was captivated by Botham and the Ashes. And I hope desperately that there's a generation of cricket fans who are doing the same with Ben Stokes' antics heading in 2019 in the World Cup final. They're as inspired as I was as a young But yeah, so I got into cricket then. Always wanted to get involved, and I sat with a, you know, a tape player taping, you know, fake commentaries off the telly as a kid. And then I got involved in radio. I went to university. I went to Warwick University. Got involved in the local radio station there at the university. Then got involved in the BBC local station in Coventry, Warwickshire. Back in 1994, I got working covering Warwickshire, which happened to be the year Brian Lara was breaking all those world records and Warwickshire winning lots of trophies. You know, and that was brilliant. And I got involved in that. And but yeah, I, my advice to you, Hector, is definitely, you know, try and do what you can to follow your dream. I literally had a lucky break. I've told this story before, but so what happened was I was working on a youth programme at the local BBC station in Coventry, and they wanted someone to read the morning sports bulletins on the BBC station 1 week because the reader, the sports reader, had gone on a skiing holiday. So I put my hand up and said, look, I'd love to do it. And it was my last week at university. So all my mates were going out, you know, enjoying the delights of the last week at university. And I was getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to read the sports bulletins on the morning breakfast programme. But at the end of that week, the guy who I was stepping in for broke his leg on the skiing holiday. So they suddenly phoned me and said, look, can you keep doing it? Because this guy's broken his leg. So I said, yeah, fine, I'll keep doing it. I kept reading the sports bulletins. It actually was costing me more money to live in Coventry because I'd locked my university digs had ended, etc. So I had to go stay in a hotel. So it was costing me more money to do that job than I was getting paid to do it. But at the end of a couple of weeks, they said, well, look, to be honest, having heard you do it, we think you're better than the guy who broke his leg. So do you want his job full time? Wow. I literally... And from then on, I worked in local radio, presented all sorts of programmes, had the chance, I say, to cover Warwickshire in 1994, did some cricket commentary. My first cricket commentary proper one was at Lords for a final, Warwickshire against Worcestershire. So I was amazingly lucky. I completely blagged it, said, yeah, I've been commentating for years, I can do it. Chance to do that. In 1998, I got the chance to come to work at the sports room, the BBC sports room in London, and then did a bit of golf, did a bit of Sports Week and Five Live Sport and those sort of programmes. And then in 2002-03, when T20 first began, Peter Baxter, my predecessor at TMS producer, wanted some help in cricket because there's so much extra cricket, and a new job was created to work alongside him. And I put myself forward for the job and by chance got the opportunity to do it. And you know, he did the job for 34 years. And then in 2007, I took over from him. And, you know, I'm not sure I'll make 34 years, but, you know, I certainly want to keep doing the job as long as I can.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really... So our final question, we've asked this to all of our guests when they've come onto the show. So 1-1, India are dominating this test match. What are your series predictions?
It's a really good question. Oddly, funny, I was talking in the office a bit about this today, thinking, well, it's got a slight feeling of a 3-1 to India, this, you know, the series going that way. I've got a feeling it's going to be 2-2 because I think India will win this game. I think, although the England could come back into it, I suspect they're too far ahead. But what we've seen in this series with the first game is that, you know, England won that very comfortably. You know, this is not a bad team, England. And I think they do have the weapons that could win another test match against India. So I've got a slight feeling of a 2-2, an exciting draw, which, let's face it, if you'd have offered England the chance of a 2-2 draw in India, they'd have bitten your hand off, you know, before the series, because they were, you know, all the predictions were probably at 4-0, you know, this amazing Indian team that just, you know, produced heroics in Australia. And I followed that test match at the Gabba against Australia through the night here. I just loved it. I watched every ball that last day. And I couldn't see England doing anything. But, you know, a 2-2, they'd love. So, gosh, if England could get out of the series with a 2-2, having won 2-0 in Sri Lanka, I think they'd have been absolutely delighted with that result. So we'll see what happens. But that's my prediction, 2-2.
Yeah, I think they'd take 2-2. Although they need to win both of these to make the World Test Championship, and India only need to win one. So I think after this game, India will be through, and then I reckon it'll be against New Zealand or probably New Zealand or Australia for the final this coming summer. So that's all we have time for today. Adam, thank you so much for coming on. It's been amazing to talk to you today.
Oh, Hector and Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure. Really good luck with the podcast. I know you've had a few of my TMS colleagues on already, like Michael Vaughan, etc. I hope that you get lots of other good names and keep enjoying the cricket. That's the most important thing. And I'll keep checking out the podcast when I can.